Man, the Michigan Wolverines just laying it down on Villanova. 8th ranked Villanova. 18th ranked Michigan Wolverines. 52-24.
I think Villanova took the night off tonight.
I guess. Michigan's got it going on, man. Jim Harbaugh and that football team. Again, you can win in both sports. You can be good at football and basketball. There's no reason that you can't be. That's the question. By the way, his Dirkness tweeted me. He's one of the fellows going with Ryan Scott Hall to Mexico City. He said, yes, let him go bang that drum. That's a good idea. Let Ryan and his Dirkness bang that drum at Arrowhead Stadium since they're going to Mexico City, regardless of the Chiefs playing there. One guy that won't be going to Mexico City, I don't think, is John Kurtz from K-Man in Manhattan, Kansas. John, you going to Mexico City to watch the Chiefs on TV?
I'm not, but goodness do I feel for those that are like the guys you were just referencing who, like, bought tickets, you know, the travel plans to go to Mexico City. That's rough. I really appreciate the follow-through there on still going through with the trip, though. That's impressive.
You know what, sports fans, man? You see crazy sports fans where you're at Kansas State. We all know how they load up the bowl game. Doesn't matter what bowl you put them in, they still go. They show their support. Few questions about the Kansas State Wildcats football team. Now, I thought the basketball team would be the program, the men's basketball team at Kansas State this year. But I thought the Kansas State football team would be a lot more competitive than they are now, John. I just did. I mean, with the returning quarterback, when you have a Skylar Thompson, when you actually have a debate, whether it's Delton or Thompson, I'm surprised we're sitting here talking about the Wildcats being 4-6 and 7th in the Big 12. They actually... they usually always exceed the expectations in the preseason rankings. Not so fast this year, John.
Oh, boy, yeah, it's been a rough, very weird year to cover the team this year, and the problems were pretty apparent right from the start. It's funny to think back on the beginning of the season, but they barely beat South Dakota. They needed some heroics and special teams to help win that game at the beginning of the year, and then I thought the trouble really started in particular where you pick up on it was the Mississippi State game, because they were completely non-competitive against what's turned out to be a decent Mississippi State team, but certainly not a 10-11 win Mississippi State team. And to see that happen at home, I think some fans were late coming around to that. That was a very, very alarming sign, but that's what really got my attention. They've been close to having this sort of a season for a couple years now, and Bill Snyder has had just enough talent to patchwork things together and get them to 7-8 wins in a regular season. And that's because, I think in large part, they've had a couple of bona fide NFL guys at important positions. Now, I don't want to diminish Dalton Risner on the team. Clearly, he's an NFL player. He's going to be drafted. But there's only so much you can do at offensive tackle. Even look at last year's team, DJ Reed. He's a draft pick of the 49ers, playing nickel for them right now. And that Byron Pringle, obviously, who is hanging out with the Chiefs. So you lose those players, and there just hasn't been enough to replace them. And the other thing is they just have not paid enough attention to recruiting over the past 4 or 5 years. And the check that was written there, I mean, it's coming up here in case they can't cash it now, because their scholarship numbers are really low. I can remember Kansas getting blasted for having 68, I believe it was, scholarship players not that long ago. Right now, K-State on their team has 69 legitimate scholarship players. The actual number they would tell you is 74, but they have 5 or 6 that were walk-ons that were awarded scholarships at the beginning of the year. So depth has become a huge issue as they've gone through the season, have been more beat up, have been more injured, and it's affecting things all across the board. So some systemic problems that have been there for a while are finally really shining through this year.
Talking to John Kurtz, he's a sports director at K-Man in Manhattan. And that's the thing, too. I'm so surprised because I love the way that they kind of came together at the end of the year last year. You know, Thompson had those great games down the stretch. Delton takes over in the bowl game. And I'm sitting here going, they always say if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one. I just thought this was a little different situation because I thought both quarterbacks would be capable of leading this team. Has that kind of been the biggest issue, or is there – can you pinpoint one issue on this team outside of quarterback that just hasn't materialized?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you go beyond just the general talent deficiency and how bad the numbers are with all of that. Quarterback was a huge contributing factor to getting off to a slow start, which is snowballed. I'm with you. We all bought in as the local media here that cover the team on a daily basis to the fact that they had really preached, okay, both of these quarterbacks are one's a captain, one's a co-captain, they're great leaders. Doesn't matter that there's going to be two quarterbacks battling it out here. It can work. We know two quarterback systems don't normally work, but this can actually work. And that just couldn't have been further from the truth, the way that it went. And some of that is just near quarterback play well enough to win the job. And that's putting it mildly. There were some pretty bad quarterback plays at the beginning of the year, in particular from Alex Delton. And that's where Bill Snyder, I think, didn't handle this very well. And a lot of that is how he did it publicly through the media, because for a while, every number through the first month of the season was favoring Skylar Thompson. Not that he was setting the world on fire, but he was decidedly the better quarterback. When Bill Snyder would comment publicly about it, he would say very glowing things about Alex Delton, and then virtually nothing if you asked him about Skylar Thompson. And yeah. It just got to the point where it was so obvious what was happening. It was crazy. You just couldn't believe it. And that eventually led to Bill Snyder, of course, snapping at a press conference and being pressed on questions about the quarterbacks. But the players see that. And Skylar Thompson at West Virginia openly questioned why he was taken out of the game. So that really started to bubble over at that point. And that, I think, obviously doesn't do great things for your locker room when you have a situation like that going on. So you're spot on, and that has definitely been a factor, a prominent factor in why this team has struggled.
Has there been any talk in Manhattan, just kind of the overall picture of what's going on with the local schools, with Kansas? I have a feeling Kansas is in a great spot here to get a good coach. They're going to take their time, and I got a lot of confidence that Jeff Long would find the right guy. But something I've been talking about a lot, John, is all this local talent in Kansas City. It's not just K-State. It's Kansas. It's Missouri. It's all three of them. They're just not going there. Daniel Carson out of William Chrisman, he went to Texas this year. Mario Goodrich, the best defensive back in Kansas City, goes to Clemson. Ronnie Bell won the Simone Trophy Award. Wasn't heavily recruited at all. As a matter of fact, he was only recruited to go to Missouri State to play basketball until Jim Harbaugh finds out that nobody offered him and calls him right when he's getting the Simone Award. He's already got a couple touchdowns for Michigan this year as a true freshman. A.J. Taylor leads Wisconsin in yards per catch, went to Rockhurst. And I know it's not the job of Kansas State or Kansas to shut down the borders, especially on the Missouri side. That's more of Barry Odom's job. But guys like Graham Mertz, the quarterback of Blue Valley North that's chosen Wisconsin, is there ever any talk? And I know K-State brings in anybody and turns them into gold. It's just what they do. But is there any talk that sometimes this local talent, especially in your area, is not going there? And they're not going to Lawrence or Missouri either.
Yeah, it's been a huge frustration around here. You know, I can think back to one that really had people upset was Xavier Kelly, who was out of Wichita, but he was a defensive end. The K-State actually had committed. Blake Seiler did a really good job recruiting him, and then eventually he winds up at Clemson. And look, you can understand the appeal there to go to Clemson, but I mean, these are types of players that K-State back in their heyday in the late 90s, early 2000s, that were doing a much better job of keeping local and keeping control there. Oklahoma has gone and found players. Mike Bledsoe, who was at Lawrence, I can't remember Lawrence High or Free State, but he's playing quite a bit for Oklahoma now. They have an offensive tackle or an offensive lineman, maybe a guard, spacing on his name right now, but he was another one that slipped through the cracks, went to Butler, eventually went to Oklahoma, and now is starting for the Sooners. So it's a big problem, and I think, you know, K-State just, they don't put enough emphasis on recruiting. They haven't in the past. They've got a lot of dead weight on their staff in terms of recruiting, guys that just weren't really held accountable for going out and recruiting, and it's made it very tough. And Bill Snyder also hasn't adapted to new rules and regulations. Their recruiting staff is very small. You have one guy, Taylor Brad, who deserves a ton of credit. He's the recruiting coordinator, and he has probably the toughest job in the Big 12 in trying to recruit with all the limitations. He has far less staff than other schools in the league do, and Bill Snyder complains about how big staffs are getting in college football. And hey, it's fine if you don't agree with it, but you're allowing your competitors to have a competitive advantage there by not putting more effort into it. So I think it's a combination of just K-State's brand being diluted slowly but surely as they have started to struggle more and more as the years have gone on, combined with not enough effort there, and you see it with in-state kids as much as anywhere else. I think that's probably the most damning of any of the evidence recruiting-wise for what's going on here, is that you're not really this appealing option in-state to players anymore. They're looking at K-State and Kansas and other situations and saying, yeah, I'm gonna take this elsewhere if I can.
The other thing, too, is, and it's just, I got so much respect for Coach Bill Snyder, like I did like Bobby Bowden, but it just changed, John. I mean, this game's just changed. It's not about sending a coordinator to someone's house. It's about the head coach showing up now. It's about social media and doing the things that impress the kids. And these are not the old school way of doing things. Things are just in 2018 are just different in how you recruit and how you relate. Kids, they want to be told how good they are. And sometimes the coaches that aren't, you know, willing to do that do miss out on them. It's just such a different game where you just can't send that coordinator anymore. The head coach almost has to show up to houses or whatever anymore to show that you really want them. It's what these kids want.
Yeah, it's fair to say in a lot of ways, this being one of them, that the game has passed Bill Snyder by. And I mean, there's no shame in that.
I've been
at this point all year where you say that there are a lot of things that aren't happening right now with K-State football that you can't legitimately expect a 79-year-old human being to do. You can, however, expect the head football coach at K-State to do. And that's this impasse, really, that K-State football has been at. And you're right, Bill Snyder has not expanded the size of his staff. He also has been against the early signing period. He's always been one that wants to see a lot of film from a junior year before he's going to offer a kid, and now you're having to get into the game earlier and earlier, and that's not something that Bill Snyder has really been all that comfortable doing, so they've been slow to adapt to that. There are just a lot of things like that have really caught up to him, and it's resulted in what you're seeing right now, and it's just this interesting, convoluted situation where Bill Snyder is stubborn and he's always had the answers by just out-coaching people, and now I think he has started to realize, in particular the Oklahoma game, seemed like his demeanor changed in post-game where it really set into him that, wow, we just gave up over 700 yards to Oklahoma. We're not even close to being anywhere near competitive in that game. I may not have the answer here because I just don't have the horses. And I think that was on display against Kansas on Saturday. I mean, Kansas, I think, outplayed K-State. They outgained them, and if they take more advantage of some opportunities in the first half, they win that game. But it was just staggering to see how much of a dogfight that game was, and that's Kansas with an outgoing head coach. You know, Bill Snyder admitted that they've closed the gap over the last few years. Well, David Beatty certainly hasn't done much winning over the last few years, so there's another side to that equation as to why the gap is closed. So I think that has slowly started to set in. I do think it's much more likely than not that Bill Snyder is not back as the coach next year. And it's you know, frankly, it's just been a little tough to watch as a K-State fan and somebody who grew up on K-State football to
sure
see what has slowly and steadily happened this year.
Yeah, I hate to see it because I got so much respect for the guy. But to get the early signing day is important. December 19th, the second one's February 6th. But most of the talent does sign on that early signing period on December 19th. It's very important. And it's also why Kansas is in a great situation because they can look for a coach now. Their coach has already been told he's good, so they can go look for that coach. And the longer you wait, you get behind the pecking order. I mean, this is something you can't wait till January and February to do. If you make the decision, you got to do it quick because you got to grab that guy before he has another chance to go anywhere else. It's just that important. And one final thing for you, John. Bruce Weber, talked to him last week, and we came on the show and was talking about how important that Elite Eight run was for them to get some more notoriety. And just your thoughts on Bruce Weber's attitude right now, because he's finally got his own guys. He's not winning with Bill Self's guys. He's not winning with Frank Martin's guys. He's winning with his own guys, which I think is a real interesting thing to happen to Bruce Weber.
Yeah, Bruce Weber's transformation has been pretty crazy. And you know, one thing I'll say about him, you were just mentioning a second ago about Bill Snyder not being the guy to go out and recruit, because he's not at all now. Bruce Weber is, it's crazy to have on the same campus two coaches that are so diametrically opposed to that. Bruce Weber is literally on a plane. It seems like every day that they are not playing a game, he's out recruiting.
Yep.
He busts his butt and gets out there all over the place, he and his staff, to recruit as much as possible. And, look, a lot of the problems Bruce Weber faced were not really his fault when he came in. And I've been somebody that was not thrilled with the Bruce Weber hire when it happened. I've certainly been critical of him over the years. But, you know, Frank Martin was a beloved figure. And the way that he left a lot of people very upset with how John Curry handled that. And a lot of the frustration and anger, quite frankly, had just been taken out on Bruce Weber over, you know, the last, 5 or 6 years at this point for Bruce. So it's been crazy to see how quickly the popularity has turned over the last year. You know, there are some things about Bruce Weber that are just not going to change. Sometimes he can be a little bit goofy. When he's winning, it becomes this cutesy kind of, okay, that's our Bruce. But if you're losing, it's incredibly frustrating. And now he's won. You know, I mean, the biggest knock against him was not being able to win in the postseason because they had not been past the round of 64 his entire time in Manhattan before last year. And, hey, say what you will about the Sweet 16 or the round of 32 game not being against Virginia, but sometimes you get some breaks in the tournament, sometimes you don't. If you're there enough, sometimes you'll get a break here or there that really helps you out. So he deserves every bit of the credit that he's gotten for especially the Creighton and Kentucky wins in the NCAA tournament. And he is now, with this Bill Snyder drop in popularity, I mean, Bruce Weber's the man. He is the guy. Now, they've had a slow start their first two games of the year here. I don't think it's anything terribly concerning. But he and his staff, not only are they out there all the time recruiting, they've also embraced a very talented social media staff at K-State. They've put out a lot of really cool videos, stuff that has the fans involved. And that's been another thing that's really helped sort of humanize Bruce Weber to the fans and at the same time generate excitement. So they've done a tremendous job of capitalizing on the momentum from last year, which already helped. And everything is just snowballing in the right direction right now for Bruce Weber and the Hoops team.
Great stuff. John Kurtz at John J.L. Kurtz, K-U-R-T-Z, on Twitter, sports director at K-Man in Manhattan. Great stuff on Kansas State, John. I really appreciate you joining us tonight and kind of filling us in on everything. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely, Jay. Loved it.
All right, take care. There's John Kurtz right there. Interesting stuff. I mean, if you're going to make a decision whether you're going to leave tonight, you got to do it quickly. You just can't wait. Well, Priest Holmes was on Fesco in the morning this morning, and he was asked, who's better, him or Kareem Hunt? He gives us that answer. We hear from Priest Holmes next. Priest Holmes was on Fesco in the morning this morning at 7:30. Check it out on demand, 610sports.com. Priest was asked about this team and what he thinks when he watches these Kansas City Chiefs play.
Well, I think excitement. I think a lot of points are being scored, and it just looks really good from a fan's perspective watching the Chiefs and them being very dominant in the first and second quarter. You know they're going to put up over 21 points. And so that gets you really excited to know that the game is going to be obviously competitive on their side of the ball, but it's interesting to see how the defense is going to respond. So here in San Antonio, I've been watching it. Tons of fans here in Texas. And so we're excited and rooting for the Chiefs.
Priest is excited, but he was asked, is it hard not to get too caught up looking ahead when you have this kind of record this early in the season?
Definitely it's hard. Because, you know, you definitely want to predict, you know, what the outcome is going to be. And, of course, that's to be a playoff contender. And, of course, the ultimate is to play in the Super Bowl. It's very easy to get ahead of yourself because when you're winning, like I said, it just makes the next game easier. It makes going through game film that much easier. You start to see things that before you might have been frustrated if you're losing. But when you're winning, sky's the limit. And it seems like every play on offense that you could think of or scheme of becomes that much easier, and players are able to understand it and be in the right position.
That's great, Priest, but is this the best Chiefs team ever?
No, I wouldn't say they're the best team ever right now, because the one thing that we always have to do is that once you get to that midseason and you play those first 8 games, the month that counts the most is December. And so taking nothing away from their performance, especially how the defense has been resilient, and they have kind of that bounce back ability where they're going to bend a little bit, but they're not breaking. And I think that's really exciting to see. The defense is supporting them on that end. They got tons of special players on the defensive side. D Ford is playing outstanding. He's putting so much pressure on the opposing quarterbacks, and that's exciting to see.
Now here's the question: who's better, you or Kareem Hunt?
Kareem Hunt, you know, I could tell you there's a couple of things that he's definitely better at. that I'm starting to see, and that's his ability to play down after down and not have an injury. I mean, we've seen just within his first rookie season and now up to those nine games, he's shown his durability. So I can tell you what, in terms of being better of avoiding an injury, that's one area that I think that he's done a very good job at, and it seems to be paying great dividends for him. And I'm excited about the young man because I had a chance to meet him back in March at the one-on-one banquet. And, you know, it was exciting to see him. It was exciting to meet him for the first time. And, you know, my little words of wisdom was, of course, back in March was, you know, what are you going to do next season when the entire league knows exactly what you're capable of doing? And what I think has been a blessing to Kareem Hunt is that with the new young quarterback that they have in place, it's allowed him to kind of pick his poison in how he wants to beat a team. Because one thing is for sure is that he's not going to get that overload of having to run the ball without every Sunday and knowing that he's going to have to be the only one that's going to have to put up points. I think that he's very comfortable with Mahomes, and he knows that he's being a leader, and he's able to share the ball around with all the different receivers. And I tell you what, the receivers are doing an outstanding job. You know, you got to be smiling when you're a receiver, knowing that if you have an opportunity to catch the ball, it's pretty certain that you're going to get the ball thrown to you on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't know if that question is fair. Is he better or not? I mean, what are you supposed to say? No, I'm the man. And last but not least, he was asked if Monday night's game between the Chiefs and the Rams is a Super Bowl preview.
Now, I've actually heard that from several people. Several fans are looking at this game as such. But, again, I think that the Chiefs have to be biting at the chops for the month of December, because that's going to be the month that's going to be able to show exactly what your team is able to do. Again, you can have a team that can go into have a 500 record and go into the month of December and come out in a great position. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see how they handle December.
Looking forward to it. The Fesco in the Morning watch party at Harrah's, winning streaks. A little late for those guys. You know, thinking maybe they'd have an afternoon game so they could sleep in. No, they're going to have a little night party at Harrah's Monday for a watch party, and then they're going to have to get up extremely early the next morning. Coming up next, I have a weekly conversation each and every week with Gary Pinkel. And we don't talk a lot of Mizzou. We talk a lot about the art of coaching. We talk about the game of football. We talk about a lot of different things with Gary Pinkel. We do that next. All right, I'm not getting this Venom St. Louis text line from the Protein House, Eat with the Purpose text line. And I will address this probably next hour from the 618. And I don't know where this comes from, unless you're listening to the podcast from earlier today. St. Louis doesn't need the Kansas City Chiefs. Kansas City voted against St. Louis for Los Angeles. We're sick and tired of seeing the stupid Chiefs on our TVs and radio stations in St. Louis. Maybe this is about the congressman or the councilman in Kansas City, the one that put a Chiefs regular season game in St. Louis. You guys forget the St. Louis Blues are on every game in Kansas City.
Well,
you don't have a team, and you got the Chiefs, so just enjoy it.
What are you doing listening to sports radio here in Kansas City if you don't like the Chiefs?
Well, it's just not you. You know, last week, as bad as the Cardinals-Chiefs matchup quote was, literally, you can draw a line from like St. Louis down, and then everything west of Mississippi was all Chiefs-Cardinals. And that took precedent over like the Titans playing the Patriots. You just don't see that very often. But the Mahomes mania that we see, we'll address this as we get in. Don't forget, we'll go inside the Chiefs Defensive Film Lab with Craig Stout at Arrowhead Pride coming up at 8 o'clock. But I had a chance to talk to Gary Pinkel earlier today. We talk a lot about things long-ranging. This is about motivations with coaches, what you learn in the business field, what it's like to have a headset on with the time ticking, clock management, having four people talking in your headset. Get pretty deep here with Gary Pinkel. Joining us on our weekly conversation, joining us tonight, all-time winningest coach at the University of Missouri, Gary Pinkel. Coach, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
Hey, we're doing great. We're doing great. Missouri's doing pretty good. You know, defense bent but didn't break against Vanderbilt. You get that important sixth win and bowl eligibility back-to-back years now for those Tigers.
Well, you know, it's really, you know, you find ways to win games, and we're doing that, and I think it's great. I think it's awesome. Back-to-back wins and, you know, continue to win in November, which is real important to finish. November is so important for many reasons, to win championships, to get to bowls, to raise your bowl eligibility, to get in the bowl, all those things. And so it's a huge month in our business. And we're doing a lot of good things and got a tough game against Tennessee coming.
Well, the funny thing about it, too, is, I mean, you just look at what happened. They threw for 253 yards. You run for 253 yards. You know, in that ever going search for balance for the Tigers, I mean, it was just split right down there between run and pass. I mean, that's simply when you see that after a game, you're thinking, all right, we did things well.
Yeah, I think so. I think go back and look at it. I think we played a pretty clean game. You know, at the end, we made a few mistakes. But, you know, the other team's got scholarships, too. So, I mean, that's, you got to remember that also. And the most important thing is you move on to the next game. You don't worry about the next two. You don't worry to say, okay, if we win the next two and then get in the bowl game, we can win nine games. You don't do the next game and playing your best. And Tennessee, I remember being down there. We had some big wins down there. I remember our four overtimes we had down there too. So they got some confidence back off their big victory they had last week. So I think we got to play our best.
Yeah, of course, in Tennessee and playing yet another Nick Saban assistant. I mean, Coach, half this conference has either been an offensive or defensive coordinator for Nick Saban. It's kind of got his fingerprints all over it.
Yeah, it does. You know, a lot of them, the ones that I've been told, they kind of follow, you know, his pattern, his process, his organization, his detail, which is hard to do. That's why he's as good as what he does, because he's a master at it. They've done really, really well. Look what's happening to Georgia. You know, my goodness.
Yeah.
And other, much other places. So he's done a great job. And it's tough thing about our job. It's not like you can be in racing or you can be in, you know, other different types of sports, golf or some things like that, where you can place top 10 or top 15. You know, in our business, every weekend, half the people feel good on Sunday and half the people feel awful. So it's, you know, just one or the other. And somebody's going to lose. And you just want to make sure that you do everything you can to put yourself in a position to be successful and win.
Well, you look at these coaching trees and you think of the Bill Walsh coaching tree and, heck, Andy Reid, 25% of the NFL head coaches have been on Andy Reid's staff. I mean, he must know what he's doing. I mean, you go back to Hayden Fry at the University of Iowa and all the coaches that went on to success after they left there. Coach, you yourself, you know, Don James, that inspiration to you. How much, when you went through your career, did you look at your mentors, maybe that you coached with, or did you ever find yourself, you know, just having conversations with other people with success, whether in pro football, heck, even baseball, whatever, or other college coaches? Did you ever piece any of that together when you were trying to kind of build your career as you did so well?
Well, first of all, you know, I had somebody, you know, and Nick shared with him, and you know, he also had a guy named Bill Belichick, pretty good. But Don James, we both played for, and had a huge influence on us in coaching. So, you know, that's a mentor that, you know, national championship and the Hall of Fame, all those things, you know, remarkable man of character. And so we were very fortunate to have a guy that really is someone we could look to and watch and just and remember all the things that we went through with him. As in me as an assistant coach and also as a player, but more as an assistant coach. I was with him 12 years. And you learn. You learn from watching everything that he does. The other thing I did, I like to read, but when I was coaching, I didn't read James Patterson, and you know, which I love to read all his books, but I didn't do it. What I did is I read about successful people. I read about people who battled adversity. I read about people that were running companies, people that, you know, why companies fell apart. You know, all those things. And so it was something that really bad. I mean, in terms of for me, it was really looking for people that I can get anything from. So I could read a book on Coach K, and I might pull out six or seven things of that entire book that I could apply it to my knowledge, to my staff's knowledge, and also to our whole program. That would make us, you know, maybe do things a little bit better. So it was never ending, and I think that's a great approach to have, to constantly improve, to make yourself a better coach and your team a better team.
Was there always that person for you, Coach, when you kind of maybe went through a spell and you're like, I need a bright idea, and you just reach out and make a phone call? Or maybe you've been on the other end of that phone call where somebody else has reached out to you and said, Coach, I need some help. I need some help putting some things together. Did you find yourself kind of transitioning to that helpful role as you maybe looked for advice earlier in your career?
Yeah, I think I did. I kind of was still a bit cautious with that. I didn't bug Coach James a lot because I didn't want him to think I didn't know what I was doing. So it's a truth be known. But you know, there's several coaches that I've reached out to and that I really could count on and trust. And you know, I remember a couple times when I was just really frustrated and not sure where to make a decision. And a guy named Frank Lauder, who used to be head coach at three undefeated seasons at Toledo, and he was head coach at Iowa, was a good friend of mine because I coached at Toledo. And this guy named Brad Smith was our backup, and I felt he deserved to start, but I didn't know if I should play him. I didn't know if I should start him. So I called him up, and I said, I talked about Brad Smith, talked to him, thought we had a real good older player that's playing, but this younger kid, I think, can do more, and he's every bit as equal in coming out of the scrimmage, so I can make the move if I want to. I don't know what I should do. And then instantly he said to me, and you know, here's an old coach, you know, he's passed away since, he says, Gary, what's your gut feeling? And I started rambling a little bit, and he interrupted me. He said, what is your gut feeling? And I said, I think I should go with this Brad Smith guy. And he goes, go for it. And that was huge for me, because when I announced Brad Smith as a starter, they about ready to throw me out of Columbia, out of the state of Missouri. And, you know, a few weeks later, obviously, we found out that it was the best. But I didn't call a lot of people often, but I would always reflect on notes. Certainly when I'm building our program in struggle, in our first 4 years when I had one winning season. So I'd go back to other coaches that struggled and how they built their programs and what they did and how they handled a lot of the adversity within their team, their organization, why they were going through this. And I constantly would go back and read and reflect on those things. I'd outline things that I think had marks in the beginning of the book, the chapters for information that I could use.
I'll tell you what, Coach, I mean, when you think about your career now, and I don't know what your schedule is like. I don't know who you speak with or what speaking engagements you're asked to, but I found more and more in this industry, the sports and the business world, they kind of go hand in hand. And a lot of the, you know, analogies and examples for people that are working in business, I'm able to use in sports because a lot of times they kind of translate. Has any businesses reached out to you about success and how to motivate employees like you did football? Because I see a lot of parallels sometimes between the corporate world and athletics.
Well, Burns & McDonald, you know, Fortune 100 company in Kansas City, I spoke there about, I think, probably a month ago. Spoke at a big meeting there. I spoke on leadership and teamwork. So, you know, there's no question. I spoke in St. Louis last week. I generally do that throughout the year. And it's really fun. I enjoy doing it because there's no question about it. You know, leadership is leadership. I don't care if you're with a football team or you're running a business or you're running a restaurant. Leadership is leadership. And teamwork's teamwork. And the better leader you have, the better levels of leaders that you develop, the better leaders that you're developing in your whole organization, and everybody being team players and understanding the importance of teamwork and working together, that applies to almost any and every business. And I do it a lot, and it's fun. And it's fun because you can tell a lot of stories, and you can tell a lot of stories that were significant, and I think people like those.
Yeah, I'm sure in coaching you do have a million of those stories. It's interesting you say the word gut instinct in what you want to do. You know, that's kind of a battle now in professional sports, Coach, all the analytics people. I mean, especially in baseball, you hear about the like Ned Yost was always being called about this. They have an analytics department with the Royals, and they'd always say, well, why is Escobar batting first? You know, analytically, it doesn't make any sense. And I know this is a big thing in baseball where recent players are becoming managers, and they're still the managers that have that gut instinct and don't like the analytics, but it just seems that coaches, sports are changing. I mean, the analytics world, whether it's football, whether it's baseball, hockey, it doesn't matter. It almost supersedes that gut instinct, as you say sometimes, and it's kind of interesting. I just wonder how you would have reacted, you know, nowadays, not doing so much with your gut and hearing numbers on why you should do something instead of something that comes from your brain.
Well, I think what you do is you make a decision. You kind of sort it out, and you kind of look at every different side of it, and you also draw from the past. And at the end of the day, you know, Steve Jobs in his book that he wrote, That was an awesome book that was written. And, you know, he building Apple, he talked about, you know, he talked about gut instinct. And he, you know, I don't know, there was a chapter or several. I mean, I just remember reading it. And in a leadership role, that's, you know, that's certainly, you have to do that sometimes. At the end of the day, you know, it can, you know, there are many reasons for why you should or shouldn't do something either way, but you got to make a decision. And I trusted my gut instinct and calling, you know, and okaying for fake field goals and fake punts. Now, there was a lot of organization and detail behind it, but at the end of the day, their gut feelings. You know, you got this, is this the right time to do it? We think it is. Okay, then they're all looking at, listening to me on the headset. Are we going to run the fake? We're not going to run the fake. And, you know, it has to do with the tempo of the game. It has to do with a lot of different things, variables. But at the end of the day, I think anybody who has to make big decisions, you know, their gut feeling is I think, you know, hugely important. I think you learn to trust it. And I think you kind of rely on it for little things you don't realize to reflect back. And then you try to apply it to the bigger things.
What's that like, Coach, when the game's on the line, you have people in your headset asking you what to do, you're trying to process information, you're trying to process the game clock management, how much time is left, how much pressure would be on you in those situations where you had to think fast and you had to make that decision right?
Well, what happens is, you know, I always tell my players that I'm not, when I was on the sideline, I was always focused. I was talking to somebody. I knew everything that was going on. I heard every play. I heard every defense and all that. So I told my players I wasn't listening to Earth, Wind, and Fire on the sidelines. I was into the game. And so many of our decisions, and we used to call it the Thursday checklist, we would spend about 2 hours as a staff. We would talk about almost every situational thing for this particular opponent, what we would call an offense and third and down, last call of the game, if you're backed up at the -1 yard line. All these real specific areas that have to be, so you're not just grabbing at things game day. You know, I wasn't brought up like that. That's not the system or process that I was brought up in. How we wanted to do it is we wanted to discuss about everything that could happen. Field position, down the distance, kicking game, whether you do fake punts, all the different things that we had. And so it was very well thought out. And as you're in a drive, and I might be saying it's first down, and say, listen, if we were in a punting situation, since we got the look we did and expected to get, you know, four previous punts, after talking to our punt coach, we're going to consider going for the fake on this one. So, okay, coach. So they knew about it. 2-3 plays ahead of it. Now, we got there, might not have done it, but very possibly did. But I made that decision based on field position, down distance, where the game was, what the tempo was, and also what our discussion was Thursday in that staff meeting was nice and calm, and you can just talk and make intelligent decisions.
I think that stuff's fascinating. I really do, Coach. I mean, I think of the decisions that go on. You're talking about bowl eligibility. You know, you're talking about winning the SEC East. You got all these things coming down to a decision you're making or not. And I mean, we watch it on TV and we can pause it, we can rewind it, we can do a lot of things, but unfortunately we're in a sideline. You don't have the advantage to doing that. I can't imagine it. It is fascinating hearing you talking about it because I'm really hearing it from that side, you know, what all the things you prepared for. And it's unbelievable just that, like, how prepared you would have to be for every situation.
Yeah, you are, and I know Nick Saban does the same thing, and I think a lot of people don't do it to the extent that we did, and I'm not saying I got all the answers, obviously I didn't, but, you know, I think that, you know, I always tease everybody, too, is, you know, if it's, people say, well, you know, you made this call, is it a good call? I said, if it works, it's a good call. If it works, every call is a good call, and, you know, that's how that goes, you know. I remember being at Washington, and we were playing Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl, and his first year coordinator, and we're in fourth quarter, and I call a play over the middle. I call a guy named Danny Green as a post route over the middle. And as soon as I called it, I said, I'm up in the press box calling plays. I call it, and as soon as I called it, I said, I shouldn't have called that. I said, I should not have called that. I mean, they're gonna have that robber coverage, and what I'm watching it. The safety's dropping down right in the position right before the ball snapped. I didn't see it till late, and that plays in, and somehow my quarterback somehow got the ball by the safety. We caught it, went down the 10-yard line, and we scored. But the interesting thing, we win the Orange Bowl. We go back to Seattle, and for the next 2 months, no matter where I go, I'm walking around, I'll have some alumni come up and say, Coach, that was one of the best third-down calls I've ever, ever seen.
And it was honestly, it was like the worst calls I ever made in my life. So you got to be lucky a little bit, too.
You always have to be lucky. I'll leave you with this, Coach. That's a fascinating conversation today. I really appreciate it. One question, and you tell me if I'm crazy or not, is I asked this to Clark Hunt once. With the Chiefs. I know the NFL likes playing these games in London. They have three this year. They were going to play the Chiefs. We're going to play in Mexico City, but they had to scrap that because the field was terrible, so they're going to play it in L.A. I've always had this vision and dream for the NFL to do like the NHL and do a stadium series. You know, when they'd go play an outdoor hockey game at the big house. I just think it would be fun to take NFL teams, have them play on a college campus like the Atlanta Falcons in Tuscaloosa or the Seahawks in Eugene, Oregon, or at Boise State, or the Chiefs down in Norman or in Columbia playing a team. I don't know if that's crazy or not. I just think it'd be called a stadium series. I know they like to play the international games, but man, I think it'd be fun to take an NFL game to a college campus. Am I crazy or not?
Well, I think there'd be a lot of benefits for it. I just think what they got so much money, and that'd be marketing for them, but I don't know that they'd have to decide whether they want to do that, if they even need the marketing, and so popular as it is. And, you know, sometimes you have to do things like that, you know, later, but anyway, that's just something you have to decide what you want to do and what you think's best.
I just thought it'd be fun. Coach, it's been a lot of fun talking to you today. The book is called 100-Yard Journey of Life in Coaching and Battling for the Win as we get closer to Christmas here. BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com. Hopefully Coach keeps writing these books because this one's extremely good. So hopefully Coach has got another one in the bag. I don't know if you have the time to do it, Coach, but if you want to continue writing, we enjoy it.
Well, thank you. And go Tigers and go Chiefs.
All right, Coach, enjoy the conversation. Have a good night.
Okay, thank you.
A Go Weekly conversation with Gary Pinkel. You never know which direction it's going to go. Take a timeout. There's one quick nugget about the Kansas coaching search before we dive into defensive film with Craig Stout and the Kansas City Chiefs. We do that next. Man, there's some action going on tonight on Wednesday night. How about this score? The 9-1 Buffalo Bulls losing 31-10 to 6-4 Ohio. Miami of Ohio, Northern Illinois scoreless. Double action. Tonight on Wednesday. No, Matt Tate put this article out. Lawrence Journal World. I thought that was funny. And it brings back memories. Talking about the coaching search and how the Kansas is actually interviewing big names. Much different than they've done in the past. And it just reminded me of this. This is quote here. Not since Jim Harbaugh was on the brink of accepting the job in 2009. Yeah, I really think that almost happens. Happened. Has KU been this close to having a big-time coach with a proven track record? Oh, the one that got away. Now, Jim Harbaugh wouldn't still be at Kansas, but he might have put some W's up there and put the position of the job in a better situation. But if anything breaks on the Kansas coaching search, which should happen in the next couple of weeks, don't forget the first signing day, December 19th, the second one, February 6th, most of the talent signs on December 19th. We'll keep you posted on what that's going. But now, back to the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll spend this next hour all on the Kansas City Chiefs as we talk to Craig Stout, arrowheadpride.com, going inside the defensive film lab. We do that next.